Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi, and thanks for joining us on Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Catola, and on today's program, we're continuing our coverage of the Selma Project for Life. This initiative calls on the Alabama Department of Health to enforce the law and investigate the abortion business of Samuel Lett, who's alleged to be operating an abortion center without the proper licensing and regulation of the state. On June 20th, pro-life leaders marched across the historic Pettus Bridge in Selma to call attention to the fact that when the state and local authorities fail to enforce the law, the lives of women, and especially women of color, are placed at risk for injury and even death. Helvita King, the niece of Martin Luther King Jr., led the march and spoke of abortion as being a civil rights issue because it's an issue of human rights for the unborn. Also present was Star Parker, who we are welcoming back to the show this time. Now, Star is a writer and a speaker and a self-described former welfare cheat. I think that's the title of her first book. It was called Pimps, Whores, and Welfare Cheats. She followed it up with Uncle Sam's Plantation. Her message is simple but powerful, and it's one based on her experiences on both sides of poverty. Charity, she says, is the work of the church. And when government steps in, generational poverty is the inevitable result, including all of the problems that we see in poor communities today. Joblessness, fatherlessness, all sorts of discrimination issues, and it's not a result of anything other than the fact that people need to be independent, and she has a way of a way out. She also does a brilliant job of connecting the dots between discrimination and prejudice with the problem of abortion taking the lives of tens of thousands of black babies every year. Now, our conversation with Star Parker. The Selma Project for Life has concluded, and we are now actually literally back on the bus with Star Parker, who was one of the keynote speakers at the rally last night and also addressed the crowd at the press conference today. Star, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
Tell us first of all about your new book, Blind Conceit.
My new book is Blind Conceit, and I look at politics, policy, and racial polarization. How do we move forward is the subtitle. How do we heal America? And the title is out of a psalm, Psalm 28. The title is out of a psalm, Psalm 36. And the psalmist asked us about being so blindly conceited. He said that sin whispers in the ear of the wicked, and they have no fear of God. So in their blind conceit, they can't even see how evil they are. And I thought it appropriate, based on the compilation of columns — this book is a compilation of columns I've done over 10 years when I was writing for Scripps News Service — to thread together that we are in a cultural war. We are in a cultural war, and there are two sides of this war. One is a secular status left, and one is a biblical free right. The secular status left are organized. They know exactly what they're doing and why. And it's the other side that's scattered, have no idea what they should be doing, have ignored, have not even attempted to engage the culture war. But 50 years ago, a war was declared on our American ideals, and we are now seeing the fruit of that. In the 60s, we had a war on religion where our schools were scrubbed of all reference to God. During that same time, that same decade, we had a war on marriage, to where the feminist movement created an environment that people should not be in marriages in a conjugal traditional form. And as a result of that, we spiraled into meaninglessness. And then at the same time, we had a war on poverty to say, you know, you don't have to worry about natural consequences from getting lost in your faith or not. Or getting lost in your single living or not. We now have safety nets. You don't have to worry. And right after the 60s were over, we ended up with Roe v. Wade as national law. So people got very lost. And so what I'm trying to address in Blind Conceit is how lost we are, so that then I can get to ideas on how we're going to reverse these trends and get ourselves back on track to become a biblical and free country.
Your remarks were very stirring, and especially in terms of you did this kind of verbal jujitsu with some of the sloganeering that we've been hearing about the conversation, the national conversation on race, because people have left out this essential component, the unborn children of color. And so tell me about how you help people connect the dots when they don't understand the importance of protecting life before birth.
Well, we have in this country had tremendous racial problems. Black people are on a journey toward freedom from slavery, going through Jim Crow, and now trapped in a welfare state that is government dependency. And there are leaders of that particular entrapment. I call them Uncle Sam's plantation owners and managers. And they are just fine staying on the question of race and ignoring the moral compass in our country and how it has collapsed. They're very comfortable that even at Martin Luther King Jr.'s memorial, you would not even know that he was a preacher. They're very comfortable promoting the racial component of his movement, but forgetting that it was because of a spiritual awakening within him that we needed to the spiritual awakening within him that we needed to, as a country, go to those eternal truths. This is what his message was about. But this political black left knows nothing of that messaging. So when they start talking about racism, when they start pointing to black life, when you start hearing that all black lives matter and the protests are built in a lie, that it was not even hands up, don't shoot, from leaders who have been lying since they entered into the national stage, and they ignore that there could be something created in this environment to where our young people are so lost that they shed innocent blood, that it doesn't matter that they're shedding innocent blood, that they can rape over their own communities to shed innocent blood. And that blood of the innocents is in what we're doing in the womb. The one thing that I did not mention today, because time did not allow and or last night, is that 1,500 black women get up every morning in this country and say, today is the day. And they go into one of these so-called safe, legal, rare abortion clinics, and then they kill what God has called his reward. That's 30 to 40,000 blacks a month. That's 400,000 blacks a year. That's 18 million potential African Americans since Roe v. Wade. Don't give me Black Lives Matter when you ignore that there is a moral challenge in our society, that marriage has so collapsed that blacks have moved from that civil rights movement in the very city and pronouncements of Dr. King. We've moved from when that time 22% of our babies were born out of marriage to where today 72% are out of marriage, and you promote these ideas that concentrate poverty so that you can build ghettos so that you can get people trapped in that despair and then pretend every now and then on national TV that you care about them.
And it, you know, I'm so glad that you have landed on poverty, because I mean, this seems to be the intractable center of it, so that some onlookers are saying, well, it's inevitable that they will be poor. One of the things that so struck me in some of our former conversations is that you've been very forthcoming about the abortions in your past. You know, part of my call is to speak the truth about the abortion in my past. And as you talked about that, one of the things that you really brought home, Star, and that I'd like to give you a chance to speak about again, is how at some point you realized, wait a minute, this isn't curing my poverty.
Well, it wasn't even that at some point I realized. It was that someone had the courage, someone had the audacity, someone had the politically incorrect ability to look me in my face and point their finger at me and tell me my lifestyle was unacceptable to God. They told me this while I was living in a life pattern of criminal activity, drug activity, sexual activity, to go in and out of abortion clinic after welfare activity, where I didn't even think about where that substance was coming from, that somebody was working very, very hard, paying their taxes, doing all the right things so that I can live recklessly at Venice Beach all afternoon and hang out partying all night. No, they told me that my lifestyle was unacceptable to God. And when they said that, I'd never heard about God. But for some reason, it resonated. I got chills. I got out of there, too, because I started thinking about the breaking and entering, the armed robbery, and all the other things I'd engaged in my life. And so I got out, and they kept calling me, and they kept wanting me to go to their church. And I tell people all the time, I'm so glad I didn't know a lawyer at that time from the ACLU, because I would have sued him for religious harassment, which is what's happening today when somebody just tries to save somebody from themselves, from their own poverty. One day I went and I heard the gospel. It wasn't a personal decision that I made that maybe I should just try to leave poverty. It was that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, that he wasn't counting my sin against me. I heard it. It was good news. And I said, I want it. And over time, that same pastor looked out at his congregation and said, why are you living on welfare? The government is not your source. God is. And I had to think about it. And then he opened a Bible. And I'd been given a Bible. And I was reading that Bible. And it said, my God will supply your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. And when I heard that, I said, well, I'm trying to live on $430 a month, a couple hundred dollars of food stamps and a welfare and a Medicare card. And God will supply my need, a creator of heaven and earth. Oh, it wasn't rocket science. No, the answer to poverty is preach the gospel to them. When you look at what Jesus said, he said, preach the gospel to them. And God will start to renew their faith, and he'll start to move in their lives. And we've shut it out. That's why I'm so adamant against the left. Because when you think about the great miracles of God, when Jesus' cousin was in jail, and he sent his disciples to Jesus, who was preaching on the street. He said, John told his disciples, go ask him, are you the one or should we look for another? And so Jesus told his cousin, his disciples, to say, you go back and tell John these things are happening so that he can make his own mind, so he can make his own faith. He said, the dead are rising. He said, the blind are seeing. The lame are walking. The deaf are hearing. He said, and the gospel is being preached to the poor. Now, what did that have to do with all of these amazing miracles if in and of itself that's not an amazing miracle? Something happens when the gospel is preached to the poor within them. They get a resolve that they can escape. And what we've done in this country is we've allowed law, our public square law, public policy, welfare policy, to trap people to where they can't get that same information. So I want those barriers removed.
Well, and as you pointed out, because I know you were there in Pennsylvania when the Gosnell case broke wide open, you're here today in Selma, you're pointing out to the inadequacies of the law. I mean, we have laws against the practices that are injuring, maiming, killing women, and particularly women of color, because they disproportionately are choosing abortion. Talk about that, because that's been the focus of this Selma Project for Life, about how, you know, if we put our faith in the law, we're in trouble, but we don't even adequately uphold the law that's there.
Absolutely. The people that are saying we should regulate these clinics are right to a certain degree, because they are the only place that you can go in for a medical procedure and no questions asked, and they don't have to even have a clean spot. They don't have to abide by any of the laws that are of the land, from environmental laws to disability laws to just basic medical care laws. But that said, during slavery, there are many, many people doing many, many things to end that horrible crime against humanity. This is a crime against humanity. The ultimate goal is to stop doing abortions. The ultimate goal is what Silent No More has adopted as their theme, that we don't want to only make it illegal, we want to make it unthinkable. It's unthinkable now to have a slave in this country, except now it seems to be coming back through the sex trafficking, because the enemy never likes to be held back. But when you think about what needs to happen in abortion, sure, there are many people doing many things. The I call them Harriet Tubmans of today, are working in the crisis pregnancy center, trying to prevent women from killing their children. The sign holders in front of the clinic, I call them the modern day Elijah Lovejoys, because he was an abolitionist newspaper publisher who constantly just said it may be legal, but it's not lawful in God's eyes. This abortion is a crime against humanity. You did have those during that time that we had such an atrocity inside attempting to change the law. And that's why I'm mad at them, and I think that this is a good idea to regulate these clinics, because when Abraham Lincoln and Seward you've named, the list is long of those who ran for political office during the time of slavery just so that they can try to make a difference and push forth. When you think about even Ben Franklin, of all people, I mean, talk about God using a bizarre character in his personal flaws, but when that first Congress came to session, he walked in with abolitionists and said, "We forgot something in this document." It was James Madison that told him, whoa, "We already settled that question of slavery." So we do have people, even in today, that might seem like they're not going for the ultimate prize, which is to abolish abortion in our society. But I'm now with those that are saying, by any means necessary.
You know, and I have arrived at the same position. And if we allow ourselves to get distracted and derailed by the hard cases, the rape and incest, and now we're arguing over a 20-week ban, you know, we cannot allow that.
And divide and conquer has been the strategy of the left, and what we need to do is just be silent to do whatever it takes. Now, rape and incest has been answered, and I understand that side that says, but they never seem to get to that 1%, that 2%, and we haven't humanized. Well, actually, the law does humanize. We have a what's called Born Alive Infants Protection Act, where the act actually says that this is a human. What we haven't done is activated it. In fact, my organization, CURE, is trying to get penalties in it, even as we speak, after what we saw at Gosnell. But the language is there, and they had a voice, a vote on it. Hillary Clinton even voted for it. It was one of those bizarre moments in history that God gave us a jewel. Harry Reid voted for it. George Bush signed it into law. The challenge is it doesn't have any penalties in it. It doesn't have any criminal or civil penalties. So it's just a symbolic type of document. But the document does say, the law does say that this is a human. So I get what they're saying, and frankly, when you look at rape and incest, we do want to protect even those children of rape and incest. I was just told by someone who was raped that someone who told her the story was dealing with this question of rape, and they said, I just had to ask them one question. What do you plan to do over the next 9 months that you cannot do pregnant? And when that woman thought about it, she said, well, but then I'll have it. No, we have services for adoption. All you're being asked to do is carry that child. And God showed us a picture of both rape and incest in the scripture. And her name is Ruth, because Ruth was a Moabite. Moabites started, that heritage began when Lot's daughters thought that the world was coming to an end. So they got their father drunk and they raped him. This is incest and this is rape. And they began the process of developing out a whole other nation called Moabites. Ruth was a Moabite who then God picked up and took to a people she didn't know. She gleaned, so God even makes the case against minimum wage laws, because had there been minimum wage laws during the time of Ruth, she would not have been able to glean. She gleaned the field. She met her Boaz, and he used her to birth the Lord. I mean, you think about it. She's listed in the genealogy of Jesus Christ because she gave us King David. She was her great-grandmother. So even on the question of rape and incest, absolutely we want those children saved as well. And of course we should move to every kind of means we can. I think what has to reconcile itself in the pro-life movement or the anti-abortion movement is that we all still have the same goal. I get the frustration of those that don't like the incrementalism because they feel that the pro-life community in itself has become an industry, and it's just on the same trajectory that the civil rights movement is, that they're just in business now, and because 42 years later, you do have to wonder how we can't even just get Planned Parenthood defunded. So it's either a question of they're in business, they just need to change the strategy.
Mm-hmm. So, Star, tell me, as you think about going forward, tell me what you see, because I really appreciate your role in Washington and in California, and I know you're a national and international speaker, but I know that you do work very hard to influence, and very effectively to influence, policy. So what do you see? What's your vision, even over the next 3 to 5 years?
My personal business in my organization is we're building a policy institute that promotes market-based solutions to fight poverty. I want to dismantle the welfare state. I believe charity belongs to the church. And it belongs to the community. It doesn't belong to the federal government. But when you talk about seeing into the temperament of the nation. It's interesting. I was just asked recently, what were your goals growing up? And I said, I had none, and that's probably why God uses me today. I just had none, and so I have none now. I don't know. I see He tells me on my way. And I trust, and I'm building even more trust, because sometimes that can be pretty dangerous. You're the keynote speaker, and you're still like, Lord, you haven't told me. And then you're sitting on the front row. And or like this trip, I happened to be on an airplane 4 days ahead of time, and that's when He showed me what to say at this particular meeting, even though it had been on my calendar for a while. So I can't tell you what's going to happen. And I will be happy either way what comes down with the court regarding marriage. I will be happy if the church is a persecuted church, because I know great things happen after you're the persecution. I see Gideon's there. I see Deborah's there. I see Ehud's there. And then the land gets the rest. And if he rules on our side, those that want to protect traditional marriage and or conjugal marriage, where it's defined, marriage is defined as the scripture defines it, then I see rioting in the street. The homosexuals are relentless, and they're not going to allow for that decision to hold. You know, they remind me sometimes in that movement of two-year-olds, when my little grandchildren were 2 years old, both of them, now one's nine and one's three, but 2 years old is when they just don't understand, they can't comprehend. You're in Toys R Us, you bought them the whole store, you're at the register, and there's that one little piece of candy for 50 cents. You got them everything. And that for 50 cent candy bar, they have an absolute tantrum. So the homosexual community, if marriage comes down on the side of tradition, will be very, very upset, and they perhaps will act like two-year-olds. But I think that it should be a wake-up call for the church. Obviously, many in the Christian community have already concluded that we're going to lose on that front, and that's why they're going for these RFRAs. They're going for religious protections to separate themselves out of society, which I'm not sure that... to live underground, to pull your children out of school, to have your schools not accredited, to not see Christian doctors or lawyers or engineers anymore is a really interesting scenario to set ourselves up for by pulling out of society. Mm.
Star, thank you. And again, tell us the title of your book and how we can learn more about your organization.
Blind Conceit. You can get it at any book outlet, and I hope you do. Blind Conceit, and my website is urbancure.org.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
If you want to learn more about the Selma Project, be sure to visit cradlemyheart.org, where you'll find links to Star Parker's website and interviews with project organizer Catherine Davis and others. And I hope you will take advantage of the work these individuals are doing, not only to raise awareness, but to provide true alternatives and true support to those who are facing an untimely pregnancy without the needed resources to see it through. What impressed me most as I listened to this interview with Star Parker is her absolute faith in the gospel to change lives. If only you and I will believe first in our own hearts that the Lord is what is needed in our most needy neighborhoods, we can then be bold and go and tell them the good news, because there's nothing more powerful to break the bonds of poverty than hope instilled in the heart of one who needs to know that there is a better way. We thank you so much for listening to Cradle My Heart Radio. If you tuned in the middle of our program, you can always go to our website and listen to the program where we archive our podcasts for you. Next week for the Independence Day holiday, we'll feature an encore presentation of one of our favorite guests, and then we'll return with new content as we welcome our Silent No More monthly speaker. This time, Melissa Hempel, Regional Coordinator for Idaho, will share news of the National Day of Remembrance for the Unborn, which is coming up in September.
a safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing's done. When you come to where you're broken again, the light needs to come. The light needs to come.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
And I am counting on you and your voice tonight to join us because I have an important question for you. And it's a simple one. I would like to know, if you are a person who is pro-life, what's the hardest thing for you about that? What is the most challenging and difficult part of having a pro-life worldview, of believing that life is valuable from conception forward and that abortion is something that should be unthinkable? To me, that's what it means to be pro-life. Maybe you have a different definition, which you'd like to share with us. But if you consider yourself pro-life, tell me, what is the most challenging thing about that for you? 800-811-3003. We had a great conversation a number of weeks ago when I asked people to talk about the path that led you to a pro-life worldview. Many people were even uneasy saying, well, I am pro-life. They talked about still being on a path. So if you consider yourself pro-life, tell me, what's the hardest part? 800-811-3003 is our number, and our phones are open for you tonight. I'm Kim Cotola, and the reason that I ask this question is somewhat of a personal one. When I went to Selma, as we've been reporting over the last couple of weeks, to stand with those who are holding the Alabama Department of Health accountable for enforcing the law and protecting the lives of black women against unscrupulous abortion practices in the state, I was outside of my comfort zone. I must admit that to you. And as I've spoken on this program often, my call is not to political action. My call is not to change the law. My call is to share the love of Jesus Christ, particularly with those who have been broken by abortion, but also to encourage those who are challenged with the possibility of making an abortion decision, that the love of Christ is sufficient and that God's people are here for you to help you through the circumstances, no matter what they may be. The pregnancy that's causing you to think about abortion. That's what I'm called to do. Share God's love. It's a spiritual calling. It's not one that's primarily centered on political action. And in fact, when I took the step of incorporating as a 501c, I agreed I would not involve myself in political actions as part of our organizational structure. The government, by the way, defines that pretty loosely. They say that I can't lobby on behalf of bills or individuals. I can't endorse candidates on this program. And so I don't do those things. I don't engage in those things. However, to go into the public square and to stand with those who have asked me to join them in their particular aspect of the struggle was something that I was willing to do, and I felt I did feel God's leading that we should say yes to that. Bruce and I both went. But as I said, it took me a little bit outside of my comfort zone. Not because I didn't believe in the cause, not because I didn't believe in the facts that were being presented by the speakers who had gathered the information, but simply because it was more political than the type of activities that I'm generally engaged in. It was more about putting the struggle out there in the public square. How about you? Is that something you've done? How do you express your pro-life worldview? Do you go and pray in front of clinics as part of the 40 Days for Life campaign, or even pray elsewhere as part of that campaign? Are you a donor who supports a pregnancy resource center? Are you someone who defends life when it comes up in conversations 800-811-3003. And of those activities, which one is challenging to you? Or is there something else that you're doing? And tell me how that goes and how that works for you. I'd love to hear how being pro-life plays out in your day-to-day. 800-811-3003. That was a great sermon at church today, challenging us with what happens when we get comfortable. You know, so you say this, that took me outside my comfort zone. Well, yeah, it's uncomfortable to be outside of your comfort zone, duh. But I mean, it's really at times uncomfortable. But the point of the sermon was that, you know, there's just such a thin line between comfort and complacency. And complacency is when we are guilty of doing nothing in the face of a clear call for action. So what does it mean for you to be pro-life? And what is the hardest part? 800-811-3003 is our number. And while you're getting yourself to the phone, I'll catch you up on some of the news stories of the week. There were some big stories in the pro-life world. Number one, Americans United for Life released its fourth report in a series of exposés of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And this report details PPFA's expansion strategy of building new mega centers for abortions and how the increased focus is on abortion in their business model. There's a striking chart showing that from 2006 to 2013, the number of abortions performed by Planned Parenthood has gone up, while cancer screening and preventative services have gone down by more than 50%. Since 2004, mega centers have opened in at least 19 cities, and with them, abortions have gone up nationwide by more than 70,000 abortions annually. These Planned Parenthood mega centers can be thought of as abortion Walmarts, as the Family Research Council coined it in their blog coverage of the Americans United for Life report. Where they open, the smaller abortion centers tend to shut down, and Planned Parenthood gets a bigger piece of the abortion industry pie. So from 2004, for example, to 2011, Planned Parenthood went from performing 20% to more than 32% of all abortions in the United States. So the abortion market might be in a decline elsewhere, but at Planned Parenthood, business is good. And yet, taxpayer money continues to be handed over to America's number one abortion provider, as it rakes in more than $500 million annually from taxpayer funds, composing more than 40% of its overall revenue. Interesting story. If you're wanting to know more about that, it's on the FRCblog.com for Family Research Council reporting on Americans United for Life story. Bristol Palin was making news this week with the announcement that she is expecting, and she is, as you probably know, not married. And at 24 years of age, this is now her second pregnancy out of wedlock. And it's also the case that she had an engagement come to an end somewhat suddenly. As you might expect, people on the pro-choice side of life were not kind to Bristol Palin. In fact, some liberals called for her to have an abortion because she wrote a blog post saying that she's disappointed. And they just apparently are so obtuse that they didn't understand she was saying she's disappointed in herself for not maintaining abstinence when she's been a pretty outspoken advocate for abstinence as lifestyle. When the news broke this week that she's pregnant, the media just exploded, not just mainstream media, social media, right-wing media. Everyone had a comment or an opinion or a joke, and everyone has the right to do that. But people are still people. And even if you have a thick skin and you're in the public eye, shouldn't there be some things that are out of line, that are just off limits, telling someone you should have an abortion? It's just, it reveals a real ugliness of heart there. And by the way, in reaction to it, she took to Instagram and she took to her social media to say, I'm still pro-life. And she's going to carry the pregnancy forward. So while she had a moral failing and she didn't maintain the abstinence that she upholds as the ideal, she's going to do the right thing. That's one of the hardest things about being pro-life, I will say, is doing the right thing when you're challenged. 800-811-3003 is our number. Phones are open. That's what I'd like to hear about from you, is what's the most challenging part of having a pro-life worldview? Sometimes it's actually believing. I think that might be hard to admit, but sometimes it is a matter of faith, believing that God really will see us through, believing what our hearts tell us when we have made that choice, and we know deep in our hearts that it's wrong, but we don't hear it preached. We don't hear the truth. Wow, the doubt can be very strong and very challenging. Love to hear what presents the most challenge to you in adhering to what I believe to be the biblical approach. And I think that Scripture definitely upholds it, that God says choose life. What's the most difficult thing about that for you? 800-811-3003 is our number. 800-811-3003. This is somewhat historic news. Abortion drones went to Poland and dropped medication. Abortion drone, what is that? It's just a drone that was packed with medication. Drones these days, by the way, are delivering pizzas. They can deliver Amazon packages. And now they're flying into Poland to deliver pregnancy-terminating pills to women's groups, who will then distribute them to women in need, so spoken by those who believe that that's what is needed across the country. With a few exceptions, abortion is largely forbidden in Poland, and so as a result, there are women's advocacy groups, one in particular, Women on Waves, which has an abortion ship that does offshore abortions, where countries have banned it. It's an Amsterdam-based nonprofit that provides abortion pills to women across the world. Well, they're seeing to it that drones taking off from Frankfurt, one of the project's co-sponsors is a German company, will land in Poland, and women will then be able to have medical abortions in Poland. Tell me, maybe you want to react to that story. 800-811-3003 is our number, and our phones are open for you tonight. I'm Kim Katola, and this is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, the central question tonight, if you are pro-life, what's the hardest thing about that for you personally? Join us, won't you? Phones are open, 800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Katola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Katola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Please do join us. Tonight we're talking about living out your pro-life conviction. And I want to know, what is the toughest thing about that for you? You know, for years, I refused to have anything to do with any conversation about abortion that wasn't based on the Bible, that wasn't based on spiritual needs of those who were suffering after abortion. And I felt as though that was the way for me to be true to my calling. And then I had a conversation with John Enzer, who's been a guest on this program. We traveled together to Russia on a pro-life mission to help the women there start and establish Russia's pro-life pregnancy movement, pregnancy help movement. Abortion is so common there. We heard from the women that when you go and get your pregnancy confirmed at your OBGYN, the doctor will ask you next, well, are we having a baby or an abortion? Because at least 50% of all pregnancies end in abortion in Russia. And I spoke with Pastor Enzer, and I said, John, you know, what do you think about these organizations that are asking women to give testimony at the U.S. Supreme Court? There are some organizations that do that, and we've covered them on this program. And I said, you know, to me, it's a little bit it feels like it takes me outside of the realm of the spiritual healing. And he challenged me quite strongly. He said, Kim, what about the woman, though, who feels that she cannot forgive anyone involved because there was a grave injustice done to her by that person who committed the abortion? For her, it could be a very healing thing. And that began to expand my view about what it is to be pro-life and what it is to express God's love as a person who is pro-life. So one of the most challenging things for me is taking it outside of the strictly spiritual aspects of it and into the public square. What I'm saying is one of the most difficult things for me is being salt and light. And you might find that surprising since here I am on the radio every week talking about this. But that is one of the toughest things, is to talk about it not as a spiritual question, but as a matter of public policy, as a matter of something that affects our neighbors, which, of course, you know, I advocate and support the pregnancy help movement with my dollars as well as my words and every other way that I can support the great work that they're doing. What's the most challenging to you? 800-811-3003. We had a caller who didn't want to go on the air, and I appreciate that. Many folks don't want their voice heard, but if, you know, you can call in anonymously at 800-811-3003. And this question was about the first news story that we mentioned, this report that Planned Parenthood is receiving $500 million, 40% of its annual budget from taxpayer funds. And the question was, if it's not our problem what the public does sexually, why do we have to fund Planned Parenthood for $500 million? And that's interesting. That's an interesting question. Rhetorical one, of course. And, you know, the thing about this tension that we have with being able to express ourselves and being able to stand for our convictions, that may be the most challenging thing about being pro-life. 800-811-3003 is just being in the culture. We had another question off the air, an anonymous caller asking, what is the best way to deal with the topic of abortion in the workplace? 800-811-3003. I think that, and this is just my opinion, but I think that one of the ways that we can represent our faith, whatever the question is, when we're in the workplace, is to simply say up front, this is my belief. I don't want to force it on you, but this is what I believe. And I think that free speech to express what we believe is generally a right that most of us do enjoy in the workplace. Now, whether that's wise and whether it's going to be politically correct in your particular workplace, those are different questions. But I would definitely pray. I would definitely pray for the person who is listening. And I'm not sure, you know, why abortion would be coming up in the workplace. If someone's wanting to debate it, if someone is wanting to know, you know, what your opinion is because there is somebody who's facing an unplanned pregnancy or an untimely pregnancy, I think that, you know, it's always, always appropriate to be able to say, you know, in those circumstances that the pregnancy help movement exists to help anybody who needs the help. And I hope that you have that number handy. We all should know it for the option line that Heartbeat International runs and answers 24/7. It's 1-800-712-HELP, 1-800-712-HELP. You can, you know, talk about resources for those who are faced with a dilemma and thinking that abortion is the only answer. But if it's more of a theoretical or talking about, you know, what we think about politicians or where we stand with this in terms of choosing a presidential candidate, I think that it's, you know, speak truth and speak the truth in love. Remember, Jesus is our role model, and he was full of grace and truth. We never want to give so much grace that we sacrifice the truth, but we never want to use the truth as a weapon, forgetting that grace is what wins hearts and minds. 800-811-3003 is our number. We're asking tonight, what is the toughest thing for you about being pro-life? Is there something that's particularly challenging to you? And maybe it is talking about it with coworkers. Maybe it is talking about it with family members. 800-811-3003. You know, if you're trying to talk with your young adult children and you have become pro-life as you have matured, that can be a really tough conversation to have. Because if you look back and think about where you were in your young adulthood, you may not have had that pro-life point of view at that time. And it's difficult to imagine how to be persuasive then with your children in their young adulthood. Again, you can only speak the truth as you know it. And one of the things that I think, you know, if you're trying to persuade to the pro-life point of view, I would really recommend Scott Klusendorf's book, A Case for Life, because he's one of the strongest apologists out there right now. And he says, you know, it comes down to two questions when someone is trying to debate with you, or you're called on to debate this. And he opens the book with a really, really interesting conversation. It's, you know, a little dramatization of two women talking about the niece of one who's away at college and is thinking of abortion, and their friends, their Bible study friends, and, you know, well, my niece is probably going to have that abortion. And the other woman is appalled and says, no, you can't do that. And pretty soon their friendship is on the line because of the way the conversation unfolded. And his two questions are, you know, what is the unborn? Because if it's a person and a human being, then we don't have the right to kill it. 800-811-3003. So A Case for Life, Scott Klusendorf, is a great resource if you wanting to know about how to have pro-life conversations with people, if that's your biggest challenge. Let's go to the phones. Shelley is listening in Minneapolis on our Faith Radio affiliate, KTIS. Hi, Shelley. Welcome to Cradle My Heart.
Hi. Hi.
Go ahead with your question.
Hey, the reason I called in is because I have two daughters. One is going to be 16 on Thursday, and the other one's 20. And they're just believing all the lies that are on the Internet. And I've actually lost three babies. I lost one at 8.5 weeks, one at 12 weeks, and then I had a baby at 23 weeks that was born alive and died. So I have actually held a child, you know, and seen how fully developed they are. And I just so strongly believe that the choice is made, you know, and I've made a lot of bad choices, but the choice is made when you decide to have sex, and that they don't want the consequences. But, you know, I'm trying to be really cautious and careful, and we just had a Planned Parenthood going in our neighborhood, and oh, my two kids are just slamming all the people that are against it. And it's just so hard because they're taking all the lies off the Internet, but yet they've got a mom who's lived it. And I'm just intolerant, you know, and it just breaks my heart, because I understand so much more about it than they do. And it's just really hard to see.
And have you shared those experiences with them?
I have, definitely. From the time, you know, they've seen the ultrasounds. I've got a whole photo album of my daughter that was born. You know, they've seen all the pictures. My children are named. I made sure that after they were born, I bought Christmas tree ornaments with their names on them. I picked names that could be a boy or a girl because I wanted them to know that a baby is a baby at conception. So that's what I taught them growing up. And
well,
I'm not
Shelley,
a pushy person either.
Sure. Well, we have such a short amount of time, but I would just say this, that, you know, our kids are being indoctrinated and they're being taught by Planned Parenthood in our public schools what's right and what's wrong. And it's shocking to us as parents when our kids come home and tell us that everything we've taught them is wrong because they learned it at school. We've got to pray for our kids, and I think that this is one of the most challenging things about standing for life. I will pray for you, Shelley, and for your girls. We are just about out of time, so I thank you for listening, but do join us each week because we're here trying to bring you the news that matters, in interviews to inspire and encourage you, and and more here at Cradle My Heart Radio. And you can always visit us online to learn about upcoming programs and find more too. CradleMyHeart.org. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on MyFaithRadio.com.